You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 8th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Paris, Germany, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Time of year in Paris, Germany.
It is. Well, I prefer to think it was the Greater Reich, you know, but yeah.
It was Paris, Germany there for a little while in the 1940s, but...
It was. Just for the Greater, whatever it was called, Reich. But yeah, it's...
But anyway, Donald Trump has been... Much mirth has been made about a tweet that Donald Trump sent out on Thursday regarding all the crime that's going on in Europe and how we have to get smart, all caps. And he had Paris and Germany in there. I don't think he really was confusing Paris with Germany, but Paris is in Germany is the number one trending topic on Twitter as of this recording. I tweeted two things. One was a picture of Get Smart saying, "Missed it by that much." And because he said "Get Smart" in all caps at the end of his tweet. And, you know, that was an obvious one. The other tweet I sent out was, "Wait, did Marco Rubio buy his go-go boots in Paris, Germany?" I think he did, you know, very trendsetter. And that's all the silly season news we have for you today. We're going to talk about historical context.
Well, we're doing this a week before the next Republican debate.
You know, you told me about this morning, and you said it's going to be on the Fox Business Network. I said, please be hosted by Neil Cavuto. Please be hosted by Neil Cavuto. And you said, Neil Cavuto.
That's Neil Cavuto. And Maria Bartiromo.
Oh, my gosh. I might be able to actually hate watch that. You know, usually I just can't sit through their, you know, tax burden lectures.
Yes.
But because I think it's just nonsense. And I just I love reading your tweets rather than actually watching it. But I might be able to actually hate watch.
I fell into an accidental career slash subgenre slash time wasting of live blogging
on Twitter.
Twitter, these debates. It works out well. I don't want to be doing this. You know what? I don't do the Democrats because
Boring.
They're boring. They're full of facts and figures.
Agreements
and policies and stuff like that. And
civility.
Well, and which brings us to, first of all, happy 2016.
Happy 2016, everybody who hasn't been wished that by us yet.
And welcome to our sixth anniversary podcast.
Yeah, 6 years we've been podcasting.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, that's a lot.
That's a lot of
we asked last year, we are asking our gift this year to be $1 a year.
Yep.
If you have never donated before and you can afford $6, we're asking new donors. And we are not, by the way, we are not harvesting your email address because we don't do that.
We're not?
That before on an earlier podcast.
Damn.
We don't save your email address, let alone sell it to anybody.
Well, let me modify that to one degree. Mm-hmm. I try, and I often succeed, but it might take me a few weeks, to send a thank you note to everybody.
Oh, yeah, I do too. I send an email thank you to every new contributor. Absolutely.
And so in that regard, I do have a list of people who have contributed because I thank them.
Yep.
But
I guess what I'm saying is we don't compile anything.
No.
In any way that would allow us to market to you as a liberal donor to a liberal podcast. We don't do that. But it is our sixth year anniversary as podcasters. That's very old school in the podcast world.
It is.
Over 317 episodes. We're on 318 now. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking about what are the podcast episodes that you remember. And there are a few that I really are very memorable. But there was one where we very early on decided we had to break into the week and podcast midweek. And our third episode.
Episode 3, which didn't even have an episode number.
No, we didn't have episode numbers at that point, and we were not called The Professional Left yet.
No.
But it was a political story of 2010. Uh-huh. Barack Obama meeting with 140 members of Congress.
Republican members of Congress.
Were they all Republicans?
All Republicans. This was the Republican retreat.
Oh, and he went there.
He was invited to go there. He actually went, which apparently shocked the shit out of a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Baltimore. He showed up. The runtime was over 80 minutes, and it was literally 140-1, and he just killed him.
Yeah,
he just killed. And this was the reason we bring this back to you today, is to point out that we've been doing this kind of a long time by now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also, this story wasn't reported by anybody other than MSNBC.
And they ran it live.
They ran it live, and they talked about it. Fox News cut away from it.
Oh, wow.
So they could throw it over to their spin people to talk about what was going on rather than just show you what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Obama was so good.
He was being the guy we elected.
The leader, yeah.
He was far too even-handed for me.
Yeah.
He was in full both-siderist do it. You know, my party does some bad things.
I think, as I recall, you've actually listened to this episode 3. I didn't dare go back and listen to it.
Uh-huh.
But as I recall, it was you and I noted that it was very parliamentary in the way he met with people. He was standing, you know, at a podium, asking them questions, negotiating with them live on television about, you know, John McCain has this idea and Senator so-and-so has this idea. And why don't I take a question from you, Mike Pence?
Yeah.
And Mike Pence starts, blah, 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 comprehensive tax cuts.
Mr. President, Jimmy Carter tax cuts won't work. We need comprehensive tax cuts. Hey, whatever happened to asshole Pence anyway?
Yeah. Went to his governor of Indiana.
Governor of Indiana.
And he's been doing like the anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage thing and the gay thing and making it really hard for his state's tourism director to do anything to bring people to Indiana because bigotry doesn't sell. Anyway, that's where he's gone. But where we went with this was with a, you know, bonus podcast in the middle of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot to say about, first of all, how in some ways you were disappointed with Obama and in other ways you thought this is revolutionary.
Yeah. The reason we sort of did an off middle of the week special bonus edition was that it was extraordinary. It was at the time, I thought it was the best, most important political dialogue I had seen in years about any subject.
This was beginning of February 2010.
Right. This is
so he'd been president for almost exactly a year.
Almost exactly a year. The Tea Party had been invented out of whole cloth.
Yep. And Glenn Beck was at the top of his game.
And the Republican Party was very much, I would argue, they were very much as they are now. Back in 1988, but they were as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
completely addicted to just sitting around jerking each other off with lies.
Yeah.
Just making shit up. Barack Obama's a Nazi. He's a jackbooted tyrant. He's a thug. He's a socialist. He's a communist.
And he's also weak.
He's also weak and feckless and he's a child and he's a simpleton and he has to use a teleprompter all the time and he doesn't need to ever think for himself. Just petulant, pissy, small-minded, bigoted assholes who were very used to being the tribe that rubbed shit in its hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were very these are people who are very comfortable sitting around with each other, lying about Barack Obama, lying about Democrats, lying about liberals, lying about taxes, lying about the past, just constantly spewing out right-wing talking points as if they were factual.
Mm-hmm.
And they just sort of, you know, it's like baseball cards. They just trade them with each other.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama walked into the middle of this and destroyed them.
Yeah.
Destroyed them.
They never invited him back again after
Never. But this was, you know, this was the grand bipartisan moment.
Yeah.
Where Barack Obama walked into the lion's den. And this was a great news story in 10 different ways. It was the great moment of bipartisanship where the leader of one party walks into the middle of a complete conclave of the leadership of the other party and says, I want to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
I am agnostic as to how we solve our problems. I will take any good idea from anybody as long as it fixes the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have any pride of ownership in anything. I want the process to work, and I really, really want to work with you. And then as they tossed off one idiotic bullshit lie after another, he just swatted them down. Well, that's just not true. That's just not so. That doesn't work. We tried that. That didn't work. That'll still leave 40 million people without insurance.
Yep. And that will increase the deficit by this much.
Yeah.
Your comprehensive tax cuts, Mike Pence,
don't pay
will
them.
Have this impact on our budget process.
Right.
Yeah.
And
in real life.
Point, and without notes, without a teleprompter, without anything.
Yeah.
No script. He walked in and just brutally slapped the shit out of these people for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody covered it.
Yeah.
Nobody talked about it the next day. Nobody ran a special report on it. Nobody took cuts of it and played it over and over again. And at the time, you said it reminded you of the time that Stephen Colbert went on the Bill O'Reilly show.
Yeah, it did.
And it was a person who's
well, when Bill O'Reilly went on the Stephen Colbert show.
Yes, that's right.
That was more to the point where this 150-plus IQ was sitting there with dumb Irishman, Bill O'Reilly, and dancing around him with, you know, Bill O'Reilly mentioned John Stewart. Stephen Colbert said, he's a sexual predator, Bill. I don't think you would know anything about that.
Yeah.
And and the Mission Accomplished banner across the back of the stage, just Papa Bear, was just melted before Stephen Colbert's wit.
And
there was nothing he could do about it.
Well, he was a dinosaur being punched. And he did. His brain simply is too small and too slow to realize that he's being killed. But you know what? He lumbered off the set and he went back to his own show and nothing ever happened to him.
Yeah.
So, and that's exactly what happened here. This was Barack Obama walking smack in the middle of Tea Party Central and saying, I want to work with you. My party does bad things. Your party does bad things. Let's get together and solve these problems. And just, again, methodically shot down every one of their stupid bullshit Tea Party nonsense arguments and left. First thing, again, this is the bipartisan moment that David Brooks has been waiting for his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the great Tom Friedman perfect moment when
it's no labels.
It's exactly. This is no labels wet dream.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party should have curled up and died after this.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't because nobody wanted to talk about it. Because
it was a midterm election when they won.
Well, they hadn't won
yet. Let's face it, they hadn't won yet, but they were going to use Obamacare scare tactics to win. They gave Obama the drubbing, you know, of the midterm election and took the Congress.
Yes, they
took the Senate. So,
but this was the height of be afraid, be afraid, be very afraid. Barack Obama's a goose-stepping monster.
Right.
And he walked into the middle of all that shit and took him apart. And the reason it wasn't covered by anybody but MSNBC was that it broke the media frame.
Mm-hmm.
It broke the media fantasy that there are two sides and both of them are equally wrong. And it's just clear that if they only got together. And it was for 82 minutes, Barack Obama, in this tour de force performance, showed that, no, one of the sides is insane and lies constantly.
Right.
And the other side is a grown-up who's willing to work with them, but who's not willing to sit there and be lied about.
Right.
And,
and he's
going to
commit fact and commit math and make honest arguments in good faith.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing, who is operating in good faith here?
He cited examples of where the parties had worked together. Here, Senator so-and-so and I worked together, and Congressman so-and-so and I worked together on this. Why? Let's do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely not a story where one party is wrong and one party is right.
Yep.
That Ron
the
Fournier will ever talk about. Ruth Marcus will never say, you know what, the problem is, one party is fucked in the head, one party is not. It was the proof of concept that I and you and everybody had been waiting for. Again, he was way too even-handed for me, way too professorial. He was way too level-headed. He should have smacked at least one person. And I got sick of the whole both-sider bullshit after about 10 minutes. But this was, if there was ever going to be a moment where you could say, this is the one that absolutely proves for the ages that one side of the political equation in this country is completely insane. This was that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you cope with that, if you are Joe Scarborough or David Brooks or Mark Halperin or any of the other douchebags who control and or front for the media is you just completely ignore it. It never happened. Mm-hmm. And we blow right past it. So, and you made a very smart observation during this as well, which was that Obama hatred stems as much from stupid people who hate smart people.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
it was from terrified old white people who hate black people.
Yeah. yeah.
Because yeah. And it really did show the divide there. We on the left take pleasure in the thought of voting for someone who's smarter than we are, more competent than we are, and better at stuff than we are, who can fix problems.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the right, you want to vote for someone who's just about as dumb as you are.
Yeah, and who will never prove you wrong.
Right, who'll have a beer with you yeah. and won't frighten yeah. you and make you do math and stuff. And again, there was no moment in modern political history where the difference between the two sides was starker and clearer. And that is not a story that anyone in the Beltway wants to talk about.
And so, I want to just do a throwback Thursday in addition to that.
Uh-huh.
Very much related, because there was a point in this talk where Obama turned to McCain, his former rival,
mm-hmm.
and said, he's got this idea and we're going to work together. And they were sort of nodding together of, yeah, we can work on this piece of legislation. Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton co-sponsored a resolution in 2008 declaring that John McCain was a natural born citizen.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of being born in Panama on a military base,
mm-hmm.
that it was not the intention of the founders to keep people whose parents were serving in the U.S. military active duty
mm-hmm.
from running for president.
Right.
And that's stated in the resolution from the Senate. It passed unanimously.
Yeah.
You know, and this is why there is so much Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Where John McCain is going on the late night shows and saying, I don't know if Ted Cruz is eligible to be president or not.
I couldn't say, really, if that were the case.
The U.S. Senate would not be passing any resolutions
mm-hmm.
indicating that, you know, the founders never intended for crazy batshit Cubans who were porking their wife up in Canada to be president of the United States.
Maybe where you come from, that's considered active duty military, but not
well,
down
and
here.
And the fact that, you know, Ted Cruz has burned every single bridge in the United States Senate that he could burn
yeah.
with his fellow, quote unquote, Republican.
Well, that Charlie Pierce, bless his heart, points out that in a moment of true bipartisanship, everyone can agree that Ted Cruz is an awful repellent scumbag.
He's a dick.
Yeah, everyone hates him. Everyone hates Ted.
So I just bring that up as kind of a throwback to here are two opponents of John McCain running against John McCain, supposedly, you know, is going to be the nominee, voting, yeah, he can run. And those days are over.
Well, and there's a little bit of a throwback here, a little bit of a throwback to the Clintons, to Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Which is sort of his presidency in toto
mm-hmm.
was, all right, Republicans, you got everything you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You got
mm-hmm.
NAFTA, you got GATT, you got 20 million new jobs that you're bitching about. I paid down your goddamn deficit. I bashed gays. You know, I hated all the right people.
Yeah.
I gave you everything you wanted. And my reward is you fucking impeach me.
Yep.
You witch hunt me for 7 years and you impeach me. Barack Obama gave them everything they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
If only this president would reach out and be a better leader. I'm here, right in front of you. I will come yeah. and sit with anybody with any good idea anywhere. I'm giving you what you asked for. I know it's bullshit. I know you didn't mean it. I know you're a bunch of racist, narrow-minded, pig-fucking assholes. But I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that there might be a few of you that are reasonable.
And reason with you and allow you to participate in the legislative process of things that I will sign.
And Blue Gal at the time said, if anybody votes with him, they'll be primaried and gone.
Yep.
And that was 6 years ago. And then I believe you asked, is this going to change anything, Drift Glass? And I said, no, of course not.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all the reasonable people have been centrifuged out of the Republican Party.
And we said that 6 years ago, did we? Yeah.
And all I want to see is what's going to happen when they start eating each other.
Yes, and you said that in 2010,
that's
right?
All
right.
That's left. There's no one left inside the Republican Party to keep up the pretense that this is just a bag of bigots and imbeciles,
run
by demagogues. So they are going
to. So when they have to actually start facing each other, and who's going to be the rhino, and who's going to be the true conservative?
So the story of the true nature of our political system was out there 6 years ago, I would argue 12 years ago, 20 years ago, for anyone to see. And the fact that the traitors who run our media refuse to point a camera at the story and talk about it in honest terms shows you the media is in on it. The media is part of the conspiracy. They're part, they're collaborators. They have always been collaborators. They will let you have a little taste of Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow every now and then. But the corporations that back the media that you see every day, could report on the story anytime they want. They choose not to because they don't want to interrupt the narrative, which is that both sides are equally wrong. And that way we can pander to everybody and continue to make profits and ratings and clicks.
And fast forward to President Obama's motion on guns this week.
Yep.
That day, the day that President Obama announced his executive actions on guns, which are really small and reasonable and will move the lever forward a few inches.
And still puts him behind virtually every other president when it comes to executive orders.
Oh, yeah.
There was never, nobody marched in the streets when George W. Bush did it. Nobody protested when Ronald Reagan did it. There were no screams. Nobody shut the fucking government down when, when Bush did it.
Right.
Only when the black guy does.
Well, and let's, and also let's not forget all of Bush's signing statements where he signed legislation and said, and this is what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean the opposite, or I mean different, or I mean something else. And over again, rewrote laws that the Congress had passed.
Yeah. And Obama is simply trying to move things ahead
the needle.
Few ticks. Yeah. In the face of a Congress that has stated quite openly they have no intention whatsoever of passing anything except the 67th
the 60th
repeal
Obamacare repeal.
Oh, Obama. They're not going to do another, any other goddamn thing but screw this guy until he walks out, until he's gone. So
and so Michael Steele, Tuesday night, Chris Matthews asked, he started asking at the end of his show, tell me something I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Steele said, any Republican candidate who makes it to the White House will undo nothing of what Obama has done today. They will. They can yell and scream all they want to, but they are not going to step back from this in any way. And you know how you know that's true is because Fox News did not bother really at all to cover the candidate's response to Obama.
Mm-hmm.
They put on Andrea Tantaro.
Yes.
To cross her legs and distract everybody with, was Obama really crying or not?
Yes.
Which is what she does. I'm not going to even go any further than that. Obama is 20 is times 20 Hitlers for doing a small few things about gun violence. And to put it in historical context, which is what the theme of our show is today, St. Ronnie, Ronald Reagan, 1967, all of a sudden Black Panthers were walking around with guns.
Yeah.
Right?
Can't have that. Black people
well,
with
because,
guns.
Because, you know, Reagan was all for liberal open carry gun laws until the Black Panthers took guns to the California State House.
Yeah, to make a point that they were getting killed by cops.
Yep, to make a point that they were getting killed by cops and they had the right as American citizens to defend themselves.
Then, like magic.
The Mulford Act was passed almost immediately under Ronald Reagan. And this act effectively, I'm reading this from an article, I can't remember what article it was, but it's documented, let me put it that way. This act effectively restricted citizens from carrying guns in public.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
It was a direct reaction to the Black Panther movement's rise in California.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Black people
that
with
was
guns.
It. And that brings us, and I know we're moving kind of quickly through some of this stuff, but the cattle ranchers who want snacks...
Yeah.
It's hard to take them seriously, but...
Al-Qaeda, as hat tip.
Al-Qaeda, as Ten Grain has used in his blog many, many times.
Many, many times.
Over the years. There was a press conference this week from the Paiute Indians who actually lay claim to the land that the white cattle ranchers are standing on and wanting their snacks and their socks.
Uh-huh.
And can you imagine what the response would be from the Bundyite cattle ranchers holding the... little outbuilding in Oregon?
Well, I assume the Paiutes were clear about, we got marched off this land.
Yeah, well, and their reservation is very close to this particular area.
Uh-huh.
And it is, you know, claimed territory by them. And if anybody's going to give our land back, it should come to us. You know, that's the point.
I assume it was something remarkably stupid.
Yeah, it was something remarkably stupid from Lavoie Finicum.
Oh, yeah,
Lavoie Finicum. Which sounds like... Huh? Doesn't that sound like a comic strip name?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I actually have some Native American blood in me. I'm part Cherokee.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
Of course you are. Of course you are, Lavoie. Yeah. I'm 1/24th Cherokee.
You hear that all the time at Tea Party rallies.
Do you?
And then you go and read their YouTube comments, Strip Class. Huh? Why did I do that?
I tell you.
It was the stupidest thing. Somebody had a link to a Trump rally on YouTube and said, you know, here's an indication of what Trumpites really think. And I scrolled down to the comments.
Why? I wasn't there.
Look, the Trumpites, the Trump followers, the people who say on their comments, Trump is awesome, they can spell the N-word.
Yes, they can. Really well.
And they can spell J-E-W. Huh? And they can make a reference to... I mean, I don't even want to repeat some of this stuff. It is a slew of overt racism.
Yeah.
Overt racism.
Yeah. And all you have to do, this is one thing I absolutely agree with Donald Trump on. Mm-hmm. Always have. Two things, actually. One is the media are terrible people. Terrible people. They're just terrible, awful, lying people. They, with a few exceptions, they are just, they have a story that they are going to tell, and they're going to take whatever facts and take away whatever facts are in their way of telling the preconceived story they plan to tell. And the second is, they never swing the camera around and point it at the crowds.
Yep.
And the reason is, from my perspective, nobody wants to talk about the real problem. The problem is not Donald Trump. The problem is not Ted Cruz. The problem is the Republican Party base are degenerate losers and morons and imbeciles and bigots and paranoid rageaholics. And they're that way because they've been created that way by the Republican Party and by the Republican infotainment industry, period, full stop. And that is a story that nobody in the media has the balls to tell. Because the minute they tell that story...
They don't want to anger the Bubba voter. Because if they do that, there are consequences to their ratings if they do that.
Instead, we'll put Ruth Marcus on television to talk about how Bill Clinton is fair game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know why they put Ruth Marcus on television?
Because she's quote-unquote a Democrat.
So that some asshole in the Chesterton County or Charlotte Observer can write an article and put in the paragraph, even Ruth Marcus, who's a liberal. That's why David Brooks is around. Even David Brooks. They're around so that bigots can point to them. Same reason that Michael Steele's there. Same reason that Ben Carson is there. Mm-hmm. You can point to them and say, see, we're not big. Mm-hmm. We got a black. Mm-hmm. And it rolls merrily along. But again, nothing has changed in the last 6 years except they've gotten crazier.
Yeah.
And the only people who dare to talk about it are outcast, vituperative liberal bloggers and podcasters. That's pretty much it.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I sound like I'm really switching gears here, but I'm not.
No.
This was the week when Star Wars originator.
Yeah.
Original director and fail, George Lucas complained that the new Star Wars is too retro.
Yeah.
And too much like Episode 1.
Yeah.
Or Episode 3 or whatever you want to call it.
You remember the ones you liked?
The 1977 one. And if he hadn't screwed the pooch on the prequels, we wouldn't have had to do this to revive your franchise, George. But I think even more than Star Wars Episode 7 is like Episode 1, the Donald Trump campaign ad is more like Willie Horton.
Oh, yeah.
Than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, except Willie Horton. Yeah.
The ghost of Lee Atwater should sue.
Yeah. Well, the estate of Lee Atwater should sue.
The estate of Lee Atwater should sue for copyright infringement. Because this campaign ad is terrible, but it feeds right into the Republican base that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Rahm Emanuel's had a bad week, Driftglass.
He's had a bad month. He really has. Friend of the blog and one of the original people who said we should have a podcast.
Rick One of Pearlstein. The original people who sat around the table with us, mm-hmm. yes,
said,
long ago.
You two should be on the radio, Rick Pearlstein.
Yeah.
Noted author and historian, famous.
And ROM expert.
And Diane Reams, the only person Diane Reams has ever yelled at on her show. Or as we know him.
Please don't use that language on my show.
Don't fail.
All he did was call Grover Norquist a liar.
All he did was call a liar a liar.
Beyond the pale for Diane Reams.
Diane Reams lost, pooped herself. No, you can't say lie on that. No. Can I say fuck?
He's a fucking liar. How's that work out for you?
That's when she died. It was very sad. The girls didn't kill that nice lady.
All right, that's
anyway,
not very nice.
He wrote a very nice article, Rick Perlstein did, in The New Yorker about the sudden and richly deserved fall of Rahm Emanuel.
Yep.
And I wrote a little piece myself. As you might recall, Blue Gal, I used to live in Chicago.
You did. When I met you, you were living in Chicago.
Indeed. And I understand the customs and mores and folkways of the delightful native folk there. And, have written about it rather extensively back, especially when I used to live in Chicago. And it still is of interest to me. But Rahm Emanuel has learned how clout works. And
in the wrong way.
Yeah, it's weird that someone who has been a chief of staff to a president, who was Bill Clinton's hitman, essentially, ran the DNC into the ground, frankly, and who has two skills, essentially. One is glomming onto rich people and asking them for money. Mm-hmm. And the other is berating people and swearing at them for not being conservative enough. That's what
he also admits that he was wrong about Obamacare, but he almost killed Obamacare from inside the White House because he said, it's a losing issue for us. Nobody's ever done it. We can't do it.
Yeah.
And we need to get some wins on the board for you, Mr. President. That's the way he put it to Obama.
Yeah. And he's a terrible, as a fundraiser, he's very good. As a political tactician, he is a disaster. Mm-hmm. And he's one of those people that just, because he can raise so much fucking money and because he's so much of a bulldog, he just keeps rising through the party, even though he's pretty clearly wrong most of the time. Rick Perlstein notes a whole bunch of things he was wrong about that he encouraged Bill Clinton to do. So, but he's risen to the position of mayor of the city of Chicago without understanding how politics works and without understanding how clout works. And so, having pissed off the unions, he's gone out of his way to piss off all the people that Daley 1 and Daley 2 cultivated.
Mm.
And he has gone out of his way. He doesn't have any money. I mean, the thing that Daley...
That's a big problem.
Yeah, the Daleys had tons of cash to throw around. But Richie Daley, Daley 2, R2-D2 as he was known, did get into big trouble, big trouble when he was mayor. But he had loyal allies in every ward in Chicago, all 50 wards in Chicago. He had loyal allies all over the state who came to his defense. He had, you know, he could close ranks and figure out a way to save his life. Rahm Emanuel doesn't have any ranks. He just bought and yelled his way into the office.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's very clear that his administration conspired to hide important information on a police shooting from the public so that he can get elected or reelected.
The Laquan McDonald shooting.
Uh-huh.
Say his name.
Oh,
yep.
I'm sorry. Yes.
No, that's okay. Not your fault. I just want to say his name.
Make very clear. Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that he has done a lot of other things below the radar to piss people off. Mm-hmm. His campaign and just some really shitty things going on in Chicago. And as far as I can tell, based on the people I still know in Chicago, even people I still know who work in the government in Chicago, everybody hates him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would, as I wrote, would be delighted to see him, you know, sail past their window on his way to LaSalle Street.
No.
They really, really
That's
don't.
Dreadful.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully he can do it. Take the honorable way out. But everybody hates him. And he has no... So the only person he has really sucked up to in his career as mayor was Bruce Rauner.
Governor Hedge Fund.
Governor Hedge Fund. And Governor Hedge Fund understands assets and liabilities and not loyalty.
Yeah.
And where the Daleys had spent multiple generations building up a large number of people who were beholden to them and who depended on the mayor staying in office so that everybody else got paid, everybody else could stay in place and keep their privileges. nobody is beholden to Rom. Rom's just the asshole boss that I have to work for. Mm-hmm. And so when he basically, Rauner said he would sign into law the new legislation that would permit a recall, and said he was very disappointed in Rom.
Which, they were supposedly allies, well, right?
The only thing Rom...
Kind of.
The only thing Rom Emanuel had going for it was... Mm-hmm. Allegedly, he could go down to Springfield, come to where we are, and talk, you know, turkey with the governor, because he knew him personally, and they'd party together.
Big money parties, yeah, yes, right, on Lake Michigan.
They'd been to each other's houses. They were friends. I mean, Rahm Emanuel basically made his money. He started off by cultivating friends like Bruce Rauner. Mm. He essentially worked for the guy. So he owes him, their pals, their buddies. And so the only virtue Rom brought to the office was that he could go down to Springfield if the city was in financial trouble or the schools needed money or whatever. And he can sort of cut through the crap and get to the heart of the matter and get something, bring something home for Chicago. Well, not only has Rauner told him to fuck off, no, your schools are your problems. You broke them. They're screwed up. You're not getting a dime from me. And by the way, yeah, maybe you should be recalled because you're a jerk.
Wow.
And when that legislation passes my desk, I will sign it. So he's got nobody in his corner at all. There's no.
And the twist of the knife, too, for me, was where Rauner said, and you know, the city of Chicago is historically very poorly managed.
Yeah.
And it's like, everybody outside of the city has what, one third of the population of the state is in greater Chicago.
Chicago and the collar counties, I think, are a third.
And so to everyone else in the state, to people in Peoria and Springfield and downstate, Chicago is just a hotbed of corruption that wastes our taxpayer money on those people. And you hear that.
Uh-huh.
From Republicans outside of Chicago in Illinois.
All the time.
Yep. And those are the people that turned out for Bruce Rauner.
Yeah.
Billionaire hedge fund manager Bruce Rauner, and said, you're going to clean up the state for us by turning off the money spigot for those people.
Uh-huh.
And it's racist.
Yeah.
And it's parochial.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's ultimately self-defeating because it is the economic engine that sort of powers the Midwest.
Yep.
And,
yes, it is.
And pretending otherwise isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah.
But there is there always has been a, you know, upstate downstate rivalry. That's true of every place else.
It's true in New York and every and a lot of other places. Yeah.
Well, I remember going to a trade show once upon a time representing Chicago, let's say. And Springfield was putting a lot of pressure on Chicago, and there was a lot of headbutting going on. And I struck up a conversation with people from New York, from Albany, mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. same trade show. And they did not, and they were the most forlorn people I'd ever seen. Because whereas there is some parity in Illinois over, you know, you can go back and forth, you can push and shove and go back and forth. The city of New York just told Albany to piss up a rope.
Yeah.
And there's nothing they can do about it. So, but yeah, there's a long-standing rivalry or tension between upstate and downstate, between Chicago and everybody else, and that's completely understandable. But Rom, you got to have somebody. You got to bring something to the table. You know, the original Daily, Richard I, had a patronage army.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard II cultivated pinstripe patronage. He cultivated millionaires and billionaires. He made the downtown a really
bankers.
Nice place. Yeah, bankers,
yep.
brokers.
Yep.
He made the downtown a really lovely place for rich people.
And let's be very clear. Both of these systems were incredibly corrupt.
Oh, God, yeah. Uh-huh.
And the police got away literally with murder over and over and over again under these mayors.
Uh-huh.
Because the mayor had the police department's back, and I think Rom thought he could play that same game and hide police murder for the sake of his election, because that's the Chicago way.
Except he doesn't. He never bothered to learn how clout works.
Yeah.
Clout works from giving favors and getting favors, and giving mm-hmm. loyalties and getting loyalties. The reason there are 50 aldermen in Chicago instead of 10, which is what there should be, mm-hmm. is because it is advantageous to the mayor that he had 50 squabbling dukes and barons, as opposed to 10 powerful princes,
Yeah.
All of whom think maybe a better mayor than he is. So the whole system is set up to make sure the mayor is powerful, even though it's not supposed to work that way. And you got to have somebody in your corner. You got to have either the working class people in your corner who will vote for you and get people out for election, or you got to have the rich people in your corner who will, you know, develop property
and bankroll you,
you and will develop things and make you look good. And you got to have a budget. And Rahm has pissed off the working class people. He's pissed off the unions. The number one billionaire in the state has told him, "Yeah, you can get recalled. No skin off my nose. Maybe you shouldn't be such a shitty mayor, Rahm." And there's nobody left to turn to. And clout is a currency. It's an actual intangible but very fungible form of currency that you can spend, you can trade, you can buy and sell with. And the Daily spent 50 years stockpiling it and refining it, and Rahm inherited none of that, and he thought he did, I think. I swear to God, he thought he inherited a system where you push a button and something happened. Rahm really thought he had that system, that was something that you just came with the office, like the furniture, and it doesn't. And he apparently, astonishingly, given all the roles he's played and all the people he knows, never figured that out. And now it's coming back hard on him. And he might very well survive, because it is hard to pry someone loose from that office. But it wouldn't shock me if 2017 came in next year and you had a new mayor in Chicago, which would be amazing. Because once you recall him, who takes his place?
Yeah.
And the last time that happened was when Harold Washington died in office.
Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, that was a hell of a circus.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Thank you, Driftglass.
And finally,
you want to talk about Ron Fournier, Tom Friedman, and Mark Halperin, but that's a turducken.
I know. Well, I'm just, I will skip Ron Fournier and Tom Friedman, because they both, Ron Fournier, who is a useless pile of skin, said that on the Twitter that he would support any party that promoted serious gun control, but neither of them do. Both sides. Gun control. Gun control. Ron Fournier throws up his
hands. Both sides on gun control.
Both sides are equally wrong. And Tom Friedman, who's still alive and writing for the New York Times, apparently, wrote a column about how he, in 2020, would run as an extremist. Because he thinks if you take the best of the extreme left and the extreme right, you can make a movement. You can make a viable platform out of the extreme left and the extreme right. Because, you know, both sides. And I just look at this and go, who reads this shit? Who actually? And then, of course, I'm reminded that people like Tom Friedman read this shit. Rich, useless dilettantes who live in castles, who don't want to believe the world outside is as it is, and who want someone like them telling them that it's really just everybody. And if only they were in charge, they would pick the best from both sides and make a nice center for everyone to live in and be happy. But the most disturbing experience I had was driving to pick up Middle Child. And I was driving around listening to the POTUS radio.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Mark Halperin nattering on about some bullshit. And I switched over to the MSNBC radio feed, and it was exactly the same show.
Wow.
And it was being broadcast at exactly the same time.
They're simulcasting is what they're doing.
Well, no, they're just rerunning it. I mean, it literally is just a rerun. But it is important to remember this week how fast liberal media is being dismembered and how fast it's being replaced by schlock like Mark Halperin.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 2010, there was a full court coverage of this amazing conference, this amazing moment with Barack Obama. And in 2016, there's Mark Halperin and John Heilman on every channel talking the same centrist bullshit they all talk.
And it's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy.
It's a tragedy for our democracy that's happening.
And right here in Illinois, the right-wing nut job organization, the Illinois Policy Institute. I think I mentioned this last week.
You mentioned this last week, yeah.
Buying up the media.
Buying up the media. Yep. Hey, Driftglass, I want to end on a lighter note than that.
Oh, good.
So I'm going to read you a statement released by the Burlington, Vermont Police Department today.
All right.
Of all things. Here's what he said. Here's what the Burlington Police Department would like you to know. Donald Trump, candidate for Republican nomination for president, is scheduled to speak at the Flynn Center for the Arts in Burlington, Vermont at 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 7th. As a candidate for elected office, the Burlington Police Department welcomes him to our city. We are working diligently with local and federal partners to ensure a safe visit for Mr. Trump. It is important for people intending to participate in the rally at the Flynn Center to note that it seats approximately 1,400 people. As of the evening of January 5th, the Trump campaign has issued at least 20,000 free tickets to the event.
Wow.
And at least 6,500 of those people have confirmed a desire to attend using a valid verifiable email address. For fire and general safety reasons, the city's fire marshal and U.S. Secret Service are imposing strict attendance limits in conformance with the Flint's occupancy specifications of 1,400 people. It is common for event planners to overissue tickets to political rallies to compensate for efforts by a candidate's detractors to reserve seats and then leave them empty. The Flynn Center reports they have played no role in the ticketing process. Please direct ticketing inquiries to the Donald Trump campaign.
Well, you know, he's going to have to book three more shows.
That's it.
Yeah, because it's a show.
It's just a show.
It's a concert.
It's a show. And I was at a doctor's office where the receptionist had attended the Donald Trump rally in Springfield. And, you know, she was in her 20s and, you know, her hair and nails. And that was, you know, she was a receptionist, 20-year-old receptionist. She has a job, so forth. But all she didn't want to talk about anything that Donald Trump said. She just wanted to show her cell phone photos of how close she got. You know, I got pretty close. I got good pictures.
Yeah.
And it was devoid of meaning for her, except that she saw a celebrity and got that close to him. And that was it. So... yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a show.
It's a show. And he'll put on four more shows and handle the overflow crowd.
Or there'll be a lot of people outside, you know,
and
they'll have to listen from speakers or whatever.
They will have to listen to him talk about his overflow crowd. So many people, so many people came.
So many people wanted to come and see me in Vermont.
Trump.
They couldn't handle it.
Couldn't handle it. Overflow. You know, let me tell you, it's never happened before. This
never in the history of Burlington Police Department couldn't believe it.
They had to close this place down. It's like Woodstock for Trump, my friends. It's
like what?
Trump stock. It's like Woodstock.
It's Trump
Donald
stock.
Trump. It's amazing and beautiful. I will replace Vermont with something excellent.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties are Jack, Jeffrey, Elizabeth, Sebastian, and Cody.
Jeez.
Yes, they are Persian kitties. Yes, they are sitting on the kitchen counter. And yes, there are five of them. In the words of internet kitties everywhere, what? They're adorable. Go visit them at our Facebook page and website. And these are the kitties, by the way, that one of our listeners sent to us in the Christmas card. Yeah. And I had asked on the air to send us a digital photo. And this is the photo. So,
thanks.
Jack, Jeffrey, Elizabeth, Sebastian, and Cody, you are adorable. And we welcome you to our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. I am a little behind in my email correspondence, so I will get to that this week, I hope, this weekend. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Or two. You know, you could buy one and a half for our six-year anniversary.
Sure.
I think you could buy one and a half, right?
Sure.
And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. And I will remind people, Amazon makes it easy for you to click our link and then shop, but they do not make it easy for me to check to see if your individual purchase went through.
No.
They are protecting your privacy by doing
that. Bless their hearts, and they should.
So, yeah, and they should. I can see one day's worth of items that were sold from our link, and that's it. Otherwise, I have to go run through lots and lots of hoops. So click on our link, shop Amazon, go to your basket and pay for it, and be rest assured, it does work.
It's like magic.
It looks too easy from the purchaser's point of view, but it really does work, and we appreciate your doing that. Thank you so much. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Our Twitter handles are also over there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. You can follow Driftglass, you can follow me, or you can also just follow Pro Left Podcast, at Pro Left Podcast. That at Pro Left Podcast Twitter handle is only used for announcing when a show is up. That's the only time we use that. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, you know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties feel obliged to tell those brave Yalkada heroes that the Ken Burns documentary people are not coming.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living.
Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogface Terman has sent us some examples of gender stereotyping in science fiction TV shows and movies.
Really? I am shocked to discover that there's gender stereotyping going on in the genre of science fiction or Lucy-related science fictional type stuff.
Right. That might not actually be science fiction, but yes. Right.
A brief history for listeners who are not familiar to the level of geekishness that I am with science fiction. Before the early 60s, there were no genitals in science fiction.
But there were boobs.
There were lots of boobs. Lots and lots of boobs. There were spacemen who would rescue the Earth ladies from various forms of monstrous encounters with robots. And
space damsels? Is that what we call them? Okay.
Who were often in distress. but there were absolutely no naughty bits allowed, thanks largely to the work of one woman named Kay Tarrant, who was the editor of the most popular science fiction magazine of the time, the sort of entry point for stories, and she just said no, and writers would have bets with each other, hold contests to see who could come up with the most obscure, screwed up names, acronyms, anagrams for sexual acts to sneak them past her. But I believe Philip Jose Farmer's The Lovers, story, was the one that broke the stereotype. Bypassed that, and suddenly everybody's having sex.
I see.
But it took really until the 70s until a whole raft of women entered the science fiction field in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Mary Shelley is a science fiction writer. And so women have always written in science fiction, but a bunch of them all showed up at roughly the same time and really grabbed the field by its ear and said, hey, let's go. There's a lot of other people over here who would like something other than jut-jawed spacemen saving helpless damsels from stuff that they can probably handle much better themselves.
Right.
So that's the history.
All right. So let's start with number one.
Miss, you see, the heterodynes are feeding back into the stimulus reaction activators, causing non-snaps of the motor control resistor units.
Oh, that's good.
No, lady, that's bad. But your regenerative circuits are tuned asynchronously, and that causes concatenation in the intermediate amplifiers.
Well, that's bad, isn't it?
No, that's good. From now on, I don't think there'll be the slightest trouble with your robot. Your domestic problems are completely solved.
Well, thank you very much.
And that's perfectly all right. And if there's anything else you want to know about your robot, don't hesitate to give us a ring. Good day.
Yes, Rolo the robot, the chromium-plated butler, is just a daydream after all. But not so Rolo's little brother and sister robots. the millions of small mechanical servants that never ask for afternoons off, the amazing machines and gadgets that almost seem to think for themselves, the tiny clockwork brains and heat regulators on our kitchen stoves apparently do almost everything except read the cookbook. Thinking machines like this keep golden brown slices of toast from turning into slabs of charcoal and keep the coffee hot until we're ready to start dunking.
Oh, Jesus. Well, okay. This is some industrial film.
That's exactly. Clear. Good. It's, very good.
It's. I mean, just the music. You can tell it's industrial.
And the narration. Yeah. This is Leave It to Rollo.
Oh, okay.
And Rollo is...
1948?
40. Believe 40. It or not, pre-war. Just wow. Pre-war. Pretending that a robot could replace a housewife and all her needless waste of time duties that she does all day.
Right.
And also that this is a fantasy, but the real robots and the real technology that's going on in Chevrolet automobiles is wonderful. And you should enjoy your Chevrolet driving experience because it's futuristic and wonderful. So...
It's a little known fact that Rollo turned out to be a fifth columnist Nazi spy.
See?
Yeah, it did not end well for Rollo. He had, you know, his German-American robot Bund started in the 20s and 30s. There were a lot of pictures of Rollo in Nazi headquarters
okay.
in the 30s.
Moving on. Here's one you might get right away. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Number two.
Of course, you must make allowances for my daughter, gentlemen. She's a... never known any human being except her father.
I hope you'll make allowances too, sir. We young men have been shut up in hyperspace for well over a year now. And right from here, the view looks just like heaven. Sugar?
But you keep helping me. After all, you're not Robbie.
Well, I wouldn't mind being Robbie in certain ways. That's only in certain ways, of course.
I can see that was probably very clever, but I don't seem to understand it.
Well, there's... no rush.
Yes, I suppose one day I shall be obliged to make the trip to Earth with her for the sake of her natural development.
I should say fairly soon, too. Your father wasn't too happy at first about your meeting us, was he?
Naturally not. You're from Earth.
What's wrong with Earth?
How lucky I am, though. All three of you are such very fine exceptions. Well, you are exceptions, aren't you?
Oh, sure, sure. Well, that is, I am, anyway.
Yes.
You know this one, do you?
Forbidden Planet. Yeah,
yes,
Forbidden Planet.
1956.
Uh-huh.
And this is the role, Anne Francis's job in this role as Alteria Morbius.
Yes.
Was to look pretty and obey her daddy.
That's right.
So, there you go.
And she did both of those things really well. It's a good movie. It's dated. I mean, Leslie Nielsen is playing it straight in this movie, for God's sakes. Walter Pidgeon plays he's got a great voice for this role.
Mm-hmm.
But and the special effects are pretty spectacular for whatever it was, late
50s. 1956, yeah.
1956. Yeah. It's certainly in the canon, if you will.
Do you know the other movie of this era that Leslie Nielsen played straight?
Was it a science fiction movie?
No.
Was he a soldier or a cop?
He was a veteran, but not overtly a veteran. It wasn't about him being a veteran, really.
Mm.
He was a landowner.
Landowner?
Uh-huh. A farmer.
Farmer. I have no idea, but that's a really good trivia question.
That is a really good trivia question.
Is it a movie I should know?
It's run on TV fairly frequently. Let me put it that way.
How green was my Forbidden Planet?
Close.
No. The Wonder Years? No, that's wrong. That's completely wrong. I don't know.
Princess Leia's mother is in it.
Okay. Still have no idea.
It's Tammy and the Bachelor.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he is trying to grow hybrid tomatoes at his plantation.
Ah.
He's a returning vet, obviously. That's sort of implied throughout the movie. But he winds up, Debbie Reynolds winds up winning over his heart. So a very young Debbie Reynolds.
I'm sure I've seen that movie, but it left no impression on me.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
You see, this is
I love
where...
that big dumb movie. It's a, every time I watch it at the end, I say, I love that big dumb movie.
Everyone has their big dumb movie that
it's
they
love. It's a big dumb movie, and I love it. Okay.
Well, cool. All right.
Not, that got us off track, but that's...
No, cool. No, it's my wife's
stumped you on Leslie Nielsen trivia.
Totally did.
Number three.
I think I can tell you why Starlin products are falling off so badly, Miss Starlin.
Where would you put the responsibility for this decline?
On you, Miss Starlin.
I imagine you have arguments to support that contention.
We've all been looking at it for the past 20 minutes. The most convincing argument is right on that graph. May I show you? Thank you. Now, right here in April is when Starlin sales started falling off.
Very clever of you, Lane.
Would you mind waiting until I finish, Miss Starlin?
That's enough, Lane.
Relax, Willis. My apologies for the interruption. Go on.
Thank you. Now, as I said, sales began to fall in April. But the reason for the fall was back here in February. Starlin products have always been thought of as something of a modern miracle in the cosmetics trade. A firm built to a multi-million dollar a year business on the strength and appeal of one person, Janice Starlin. From the beginning right through until February of this year, only one woman's face was used to advertise those products. Your face, Miss Starlin. The public have come to accept you as a symbol. Well, now, after 16 years, they see a different face. They don't trust it. They feel cheated. The simple fact is that Starlin Cosmetics should have Janice Starlin's picture advertising them. Well, that's about all I've got to say.
A darn good job of saying it, too.
I agree. Lane makes a lot of sense on that score, Miss Starlin.
I think I've had enough flattery for one morning, gentlemen. Very convincing argument, Lane. There's only one small factor you've overlooked. Not even Janice Starlin can remain a glamour girl forever.
I have no idea what this is. It sounds very much like, if it's a science fiction movie at all, which you really can't tell from the context, mm-hmm. It would be the woman involved is on the verge of trying to become young again or stay young because women, once they reach a certain age, are useless.
Right.
And will cause our sales to plummet.
Yeah.
So this
is Wasp Woman.
Wasp Woman. Okay. I never
1959. Dogface Sherman says, I could say how this movie is trying to say something important about how our society values women based on looks, but this is a Roger Corman movie.
Yeah. There's a message in there somewhere if you look hard enough.
The Wasp Woman with the very skinny waist and the very large tits, right?
Yeah.
He reminds us, Dogface Herman reminds us, that remember that scene in Ed Wood when Ed asks the producer if there's a script and the producer says, fuck no, but there's a poster.
Yeah.
We start shooting in a week. Yeah, okay.
Well, and there was a lot of pulp science fiction written in that order.
Yep.
Where the artist would knock out something with, you know, bug eyes and
big tits and a monster,
big tits, whatever it was.
Right.
And it was, okay, guys, write a story about this.
Yeah.
And my science fiction writing teacher, who became a pal of mine and with whom I collaborated a few times, would bring in some artwork, original artwork, and do the same exercise in class. And it was very useful and interesting.
Well, it taught you in pulp fiction what the variables were. Where did the monster come from? Was it scientific accident or space alien or something else if you got really creative? And then you had to write some make cute dialogue with the woman, right? And the hero?
No, not necessarily. No, this was more because this was not try to replicate the story.
Oh.
But what takes your attention about this picture?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Find a story in this picture somewhere. And sometimes
it's an exercise in detail.
Yeah. It might have been something in the background or something hiding in a bush or...
You and I could both do an online writing class.
We should just do that.
We should just do audio of, here's your assignment for the week, everybody. And post it over at this blog, and here's the password, and you just get to go. get a lot of trolls that way, but whatever.
Okay. Well, as long as their check clears.
We don't send them the password until they send a check. That's
trolls
it.
Trolls got to eat, too. Honey.
Trolls got to pay. Trolls got to pay. All right, let's try this one.
We really could do that, though.
We could.
Honest to God, we could do a really, really good online writing, mm-hmm. especially genre writing, where you can really teach people how to craft a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
You should release your inner self, and you should follow.
We could read the best ones on the air.
We could do that.
You know, I think that's an idea for a show. Science Fiction University.
Right.
Where you do trivia for 10 minutes, and then we have a writing assignment, and we read what you wrote as part of the assignment, what I wrote, and then invite listeners to send in theirs, and then we read those on the air.
Well, and as long as we're spitballing, one modification is I used to teach writing.
Yeah.
And I still sort of do sometimes, I guess. Not formally, but the take a place and recall exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Every week you will be challenged to remember something from the story last week.
Ah, that's nice.
And it really does train your brain to listen for what the telling details are of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't necessarily feel obliged to cram your story with nothing but spectacular exploding things that happen right in front of your eyes. But Elmore Leonard, I think, said his secret was getting rid of all the stuff nobody's going to read anyway.
Yep.
So, you know, anyway, I think we have an idea there. Let's hear from our listeners to see if that's an idea that they would find intriguing.
Throw that out there.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
So, and you can write us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. That goes to both of us. So let us know what you think. All right. Number four.
Forgive me for staring, Miss 709. But you're a fabulous electronic creation.
And structurally, I'm very well built.
Yeah, I'll go along with that, too. Excuse me, but this material that you're made...
My cosmetic covering is low-modulus polyethylene plastic. It gets its warmth from the infrared rays in the atmosphere, which are picked up by my microscopic sensors. It has the same chemical properties as human skin. 98.6.
Yeah. Nice and warm.
Oh, Jesus. I know this is... It's a TV series. It has to be. And yes, that's Julie Newmar.
That's definitely Julie Newmar. Yes, it is.
If you are a gentleman of a certain age, you goddamn well know when it's Julie Newmar. I don't know what it is. It's clearly the message being, women are best when they have an off switch. You can build them to spec and have an off switch, and that's awesome. And the laugh track, you know, really is the universal sweetening laugh track from
period. Yes, it is. It's so 1964. This is 64. The show called My Living Doll.
Oh, yeah.
With Bob Cummings. And I went and looked up several YouTubes of this show, My Living Doll. I cannot find a clip from the show where he is not wearing a suit and tie.
Yeah.
Bob Cummings.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he can be ogling Julie Newmar, and this is his doll, and she's a robot, and she's, you know, interacts with him. But no touchy. What you don't realize is she may be fully functional, but Bob Cummings is a Ken doll underneath that suit.
Sad, isn't it?
All right. Number five.
Okay. What's the sitch?
Sorry?
You heard about the dead guy, right? The dead guy in the locker?
Yes.
Because it's the weirdest thing. He's got two little holes in his neck, and all his blood's been drained. Isn't that bizarre? Aren't you just going, ooh?
I was afraid of this.
Well, I wasn't. It's my first day. I was afraid that I was going to be behind in all my classes, that I wouldn't make any friends, that I would have last month's hair. I didn't think there'd be vampires on campus, and I don't care.
By voice alone, that is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's Buffy, and Joss Whedon takes characters who are usually the victims, like a high school cheerleader, and makes them the heroes.
Victims or airheads.
Yeah. Stupid, but here they're smart and capable.
They're the protagonist.
All right, here's a tough one. Number six.
She's going off road into hostile territory.
Why would she do that, Dad?
Let me see.
Rictus.
I want to see.
Rictus, go see what's agitating Dad.
Not your property!
Miss Kitty!
You cannot own a human being! Sooner or later, someone pushes back!
Where is she taking them?
She didn't take them! They begged her to go!
Where is she taking them?
A long way from you!
Oh, man. Was it made in the last couple of years?
It's made last year.
Okay, then this has to be Mad Max.
Mad Max Fury Road. We haven't seen this movie yet.
No, haven't seen it yet. But speaking of making the woman the protagonist.
Yeah, and tough.
Yeah.
And capable. Yeah.
I hear nothing but good things about this movie.
We will get to this.
Yeah.
We will.
Really and truly. I hear it's just friggin' awesome with practical.
Next time the kids are out of town, we'll put this on.
Yeah. Hey, kids, get over to family.
Although I do think that probably Junior Dude would like this movie. He's 17. I think he'd probably really like it.
Oh, speaking of family movie night, I'm thinking the Blues Brothers next time.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got a lot of important messages for the kids today.
Chicago.
And really, I want to start corrupting them. I've already gotten them watching zombie movies.
Mm-hmm.
And
we all know how we're spending Valentine's Day. I'm going to be out in the living room knitting to Downton Abbey. And he's going to be back in the bedroom with the girls watching the new episode of the new half season of Walking Dead.
Could it be more perfect? Probably
not. It could
not
be more perfect.
I'm sorry. It's time we got them hooked on the blues, too.
It's not only is this particular episode our 6th anniversary podcast, but
it is.
That week, February 14th-ish, is the week when I came up to Chicago for a blogger meetup and met a fellow blogger named Driftglass.
And I said,
back
hey!
In 2008, I think it was.
It's
yeah, 2008. February, I think the meetup was like the 16th of February or something. I have to look at the calendar. It was a Saturday night.
It was a dark time in the empire.
And it was Shakespeare's sister put together a blogger meetup.
Yeah.
And you and I met, and you sat next to me, and you didn't leave my side the whole evening.
I did. I taped off the area, and I said...
I kind of noticed that.
Well,
and I was going through a divorce, and it wasn't a fun time for me, but you were very nice.
Well, I think you could safely say we hit it off.
We did. We did hit it off. And that was another one of those times when we were sitting around and all of a sudden people were listening to the two of us talk.
And I believe someone said, you guys should do a
radio show. You guys sound really good. Yeah, right. I don't know if they said it at that meetup, but there were meetups after that when that definitely happened.
We just kept going to meetups until we forced people to say it. So we could say it. Say it. Say the words.
Say the words.
Say it.
The words are, you two should be on the radio. Okay.
Good. Now, do it again for, safety take. So.
We're going to record it now.
All right, so.
All right, so we have a bonus clip from Dogface Herman.
Okay.
Dogface Herman, before I play the clip, wants you to know that papers could be written on how bad this show really is.
So, okay.
There's a hint. Here it is.
Now, you stay right here and listen. Boy, you're going to feel pretty sheepish when you hear what you're going to hear.
Hi, Mom. Just thought I'd come down and say goodnight. Night? Mom, you asleep already? Mom? Mom, wake up, Mom. It's kind of warm tonight, Mom. How about a glass of ice water? How about a radiator full of iced tea, huh?
You shouldn't try to trick me, David.
How did you know she was there?
I saw her in my rearview mirror. How many times do I have to tell you, Davey? No eyewitnesses. The Smithsonian Institute, you remember? Those drafty floors.
To me, she talks.
Those people staring, that's not for me.
Boy, does she talk.
Just like your father. Stubborn, bullheaded.
Oh, I have never seen an episode of this show, but I know what it is.
What is it?
That's Jerry Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very distinctive voice. And his... This is My Mother, the Car.
This is My Mother, the Car. I don't know how this got green-lighted, but...
She's your mother, but she's a car. Great.
I blame the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
You know?
There is a lot of drinking.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was sponsored by a car company, I would assume.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's... The The Van Dyke brothers. There's a whole paper to be written there.
Yes, there is. All right. Thank you, Drift Class. Thank you, Dogfaced Herman.
My pleasure.
We sure do appreciate all that Dogfaced Herman does for us.
We do.
And I love you, Drift Class.
I love you,
Happy
too.
Sixth podcast anniversary.
Yeah, I know. It's weird, isn't it?
6 years we've been doing this.
I know. It's
thank you to all of our listeners for being there for us. We appreciate you so much.
And we have that one rule.
Yeah, the rule is that we stop doing it when it stopped being fun, but that hasn't happened in 6 years, so
I thought it was we keep doing it until we need glasses.
That's something else.
Something else. See, I always get those confused.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the Julie Newmar comment you made is the little head remembered that one, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Julie Newmar. She's awesome.
I remember her. Yeah.
Well, everyone, come on. Everyone remembers her. Everyone remembers Barbara Feldon is in there.
Yeah.
And Diana Riggs is in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
All the outfits Diana Rigg wore to prove to the universe that she was not wearing panties.
Right. And she did. And she succeeded. Did.
And she succeeded, letting you know she was not wearing panties. Okay.
All right, baby.
On that note, I love you, Drift Class.
Love you, too. Bye.
Bye, everybody.